Blog Talk Radio.
Well, hello, and welcome to Indie Streak. My name is Rachel Galvin, and as you know, I interview film industry professionals on this show. And if you've missed any of my shows, you can go back and listen to the archives. I have everything there. Well, today I'm going to be interviewing Emmy Award-winning director Kirk Gillian, who I've had the pleasure to know for a while. I had a chance to work with him. He was a cinematographer on a movie called Caught in the Middle. And we're going to talk about that project as well as some of the other projects that he's involved with. And I think I have him on the line right now. Let's see. Kirk, are you there?
Yeah.
Okay, great.
How's it going?
Okay. We're going to dive right in.
Cool.
Before we get to some of your recent projects, which there are many, I want to kind of go back in time into how you got into this business in the first place. How did you get your start?
Actually, it's an interesting story. My identical twin and I, growing up living in North Carolina, wanted to play high school football. We were 14, and the coaches were like, no way, you kids are going to break every bone in your body, so would you like to film the football games? And this was in 1980, and it was a small area there in North Carolina, and 3A team, and we had two 16-millimeter film cameras and started filming football games. I continued my senior year. They got a video camera. This was in 83, fall of 83. And anyway, it worked out that one day I had the camera with me, and there was a hotel that was burning down. I filmed it, and ABC, NBC, and CBS came up from Charlotte, North Carolina, and ABC bought my footage for $35, I think it was, which was a lot of money back in those days. You could go out on a date with that. And and that's how it started. I was going to study and be an architect. And I started, at that age, working as a freelancer. They called me 2 weeks later and continued to work as a freelancer, as a cameraman, covering Western North Carolina. And I realized that I was made to be a cameraman and not an architect. So that's how it started.
And you worked for all the major networks, CBS, ABC, NBC,
yeah.
CNN, right?
Yes, I worked for local affiliates before I moved to Portugal. I moved to Portugal in 1991 and lived there until 2003. And when I came back, I lived and worked in Portugal as a cinematographer also. But when I came back to the States, I got into the network side in terms of freelancing as a cameraman. And so I could work for Fox News one day and 3 days later be doing something for the Today Show. So it just depended on who needed me. And basically I'd get a call and meet a producer, and they'd bring a live truck out and we would send, a satellite truck and send the feed. And that's how it works.
And they worked on everything from Good Morning America to Bill Moyers' After the War film. What gig from all of that experience with TV, what gig do you think was the most rewarding out of those types of projects?
Out of those types of projects, it's hard to tell. I can say that on the Bill Moyers project was interesting, and then when I was living in Portugal, I did a show in the early 90s, Indochina series, and we filmed in Vietnam, Laos, Cambodia, and Burma, and that was broadcast in Europe, and that would, for me, was just the most rewarding for the fact that the diving into these cultures and figuring them out and trying to get them on film, obviously as a cameraman, was a challenge, and you just learned so much. And I think that living overseas for me was the big plus in terms of growing and learning that doing everything by the book in terms of cinematography isn't always the right way to do it. Well, because they do, the lighting, they teach you, the backlight and the kicker and all this. And it's really, I learned that less is more, actually. And it was huge for me, living over there. So,
do you think you've developed a certain cinematography style that brings people back to you again and again? Or is it more about your professionalism that keeps getting you all the gigs? What do you think it is?
I think it could be the style. I think real life is important, and I try to make things as real as possible without adding too much artificial light. And the professionalism side, I have a very calm demeanor.
But
I think that it's important, you know, on set for a cinematographer to try to, you know, help create calm instead of running around panicking, putting up lights and whatever, and directing and producing as well. It's the same. I think that it's documentary style, the real life look, and then obviously just the way I work, and I've got this really calm, mellow way about me. Mm-hmm. So people say. Sometimes I don't think.
What do you think's been your biggest challenge in your career?
Biggest challenge, I think, was learning a language. When I lived in Portugal, I had to learn Portuguese, and it had to fit in. And it was, you know, it's interesting. I understand, you know, when I look at immigrants here in the U.S. and see how they have to fit in and try to work, and it's difficult. In Portugal, I had I had cameramen or other camera assistants or people say that are in the film business say, "What are you doing here? All of us dreamed of going to America. You know, it's a Hollywood film, and you're living in Lisbon here in Portugal, and you're taking our jobs." I mean, that's how it was. You know? But I lived there. I was my first wife was from there. I met her when I was, you know, in college. I have two beautiful sons that live there, and Portugal will always be a part of my life. But that's why I lived there, you know. And but it was still difficult fitting in, even though I already had an in into the country there. So
now you've received an Emmy in addition to other awards. What was the Emmy for, and how did you get noticed for something like that?
I think a stroke of luck. When I came back to the United States, I had such a disconnect to the U.S. and to U.S. production because I was mainly working on European productions. I moved to Charleston, South Carolina to in 03 to write a film, basically a film that I was writing. I started writing in 1997 in Portugal, and it was going to be based in Beaufort, South Carolina. So the closest large town to Beaufort was Charleston. I went to Charleston. I didn't have a job. I didn't have the connections with CNN and some of the other networks, and I had to find something. And so my commercial background in Portugal, I think, helped me get a job with an NBC affiliate in Charleston. And I literally bugged them every day until they gave me a job, and I'd never done marketing before. But basically I was a marketing producer for the NBC affiliate there. And we did two 30-second pieces, but it was a show called Blitz on Tube. And it was a promotional piece for that high school football show. And we won the Emmy out of Atlanta, exactly. Won an Emmy out of Atlanta, and it was a team of five of us. And it was an amazing experience because it was a year I'd just gotten back. You know, it was a year later of I won an Emmy, and it was kind of cool. So,
yeah.
And it was a lot of
That's
fun.
That's a surprise,
it was a spoof,
right?
It was a spoof. It was kind of like the ESPN type shows you see now, and this was in 03, but it was a lot of fun. We had the local mascots from the local colleges and the semi-pro teams there come in and help the sports anchor promote this show. Mm-hmm. So the first 30-second spot was, hey, we've got all these, you know, mascots, and we're filming the mascots there, putting in tapes and typing with their giant hands and whatever. And the last 30-second piece was, uh-oh, we shouldn't have brought these guys in here. It's chaos. And you have the mascot sliding across the counter and pulling tape out of the beta tapes, you know, and but it was a lot of fun. And I was fortunate to be able to work with those guys.
And you've worked in various capacities in a lot of independent films here in Florida, including, I'm going to mention first, Caught in the Middle, which I had the pleasure to be a part of. In that film, you had to work with kids. That movie's about bullying. Can you tell us a little bit about that experience working with kids and how it might have been different from some of your other projects and what the development is right now on that film?
Well, that was a lot of fun. You know, Talina's the director of that show, and I don't know, working
Selena
with
Dama.
Kids.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, exactly. You know, working with kids can be easier sometimes than working with adults. For me as a cinematographer, it was easy just because Selena, that's the first time I've actually worked with her as a cinematographer, but she's just wonderful to work with. But the kids part is basically you get a lot of adults on a film and everyone wants to direct as well or to tell the director what to do or maybe talk about the lighting or whatever. And kids, they just want to make a film and go with it. You know, and they're young, talented, they've got fresh ideas. They'll do anything you ask them to do, you know, and I think that was the easiest part. I say it's difficult to work with kids, well, they say kids and animals, right, for commercials or for films, but I thought it was actually, or they say it's more difficult. I thought it was pretty easy and a lot of fun. That whole crew was a lot of fun. And I'm actually, the editing's finished. I think they're producing the sound now, but I'm actually going back and I'm doing the color grade for the film since I shot it in a particular way. So I'm grading the film. Should be ready probably by tomorrow. And I think they'll be ready to have, I think by September, they'll be ready to have a premiere or something. So.
Great. And right now you're editing Alan Darnay's Chrissy Belle. I know editing can be grueling. Have you found any shortcuts to editing or anything, kind of tips that you might be able to give advice on?
Listen. Listen to the director. That's what it is.
Yeah.
That's what it's about, I think. And then obviously an editor should put their own, like any sound editor or costume design or whatever. You got to put your own creative spin into it. The best part is listening to what your director wants or what the producer wants and really work hard to make that part of your job, make it come through in the editing or like sound design or whatever it is you do. But it's so important to listen with anything, I think. So.
And that project is about a Southern belle that moves to Miami and is kind of in culture shock. Let me just have you talk about what phase the movie is in right now. It's a pilot, actually, right, with several episodes. So where is that right now? Are you still shooting a bunch of more episodes? Or
I was in New York last week shooting on my documentary, and actually they shot a couple of more episodes. So we're editing, I guess it's three episodes. We finished one. We're working on the other two. And then they shot, like I said, last week, and we'll be editing those as well. So I think it's a total of five that we're putting together. So we're in the beginning stages of the edit, but actually we're editing this week as well. And Alan's an incredible director, and he's
Alan Darnay.
Alan Darnay, his vision, you know, it's just I love working with him. You know, he knows what he's doing, and it's an absolute pleasure. And it's going to be a great show too. So I got to stay tuned for that.
Great. And now I want to get to the project that you're probably most involved with, which is called A Mother's Love, which kind of follows your significant other as she's searching for her mother, but it's not that simple. Can you tell us the whole story a little bit and where you're at right now with production?
Yes. A Mother's Love started, almost a year year and a half ago. I mean, my better half and I, we've been together 5 years, decided to have a baby. And when she got pregnant, her life, I think both of our lives changed, but her life really changed. And I'll tell you why. She's an adoptee from Operation Baby Lift, from the Vietnam War. At the end of the war, the U.S. government allocated $2 million to evacuate the 3,000 and some odd orphans that were left there. And so in the last week or 2 weeks of the war, they got them out. And she was one of those children, and she was one of the children that didn't have paperwork. So a lot of the kids that came out did, but some of them didn't. And so she was adopted by a woman, Sue, in New York, and Cara arrived on May 11th, 1975, into her adoptive mother's arms, or into her, we call her mother, obviously, she is her mother, under her mother's arms, May 11, 1925, on Mother's Day. Mm-hmm. So before Cara was pregnant, she didn't really care too much about Vietnam, learning her culture, learning where she came from. And then with the pregnancy came this yearning to learn more, and suddenly this yearning to find out more about her birth mother, if that's even possible, and due to the fact of her being a mother. You know, she had a child, and she looked at her son Aiden and said, he's 9 months old now, and she's like, you know, I understand the sacrifice my birth mother gave to me by giving me up. I mean, she gave her up to save her, not because she didn't want her. So it's a flip on to, okay, now how do we find her? So we reconnected with a group, Operation Reunite, which DNA tests adoptees from Vietnam and from other places to help in their search to find their biological families. And so what we're going to do is go to the village where Cara was given up, which is Rakia, in the very south of Vietnam in the Mekong Delta. And we're going to start there with the DNA search of volunteers. We have mothers that are already volunteering that have they've given up children to DNA test them. And if we can come across her mother or possibly, you know, a sibling. I know that a lot of siblings are coming out and saying, you know, my mother spoke about, you know, having a child and gave her up, but maybe that mother is not living anymore. So it could be brothers and sisters that are out DNA testing. And that's really the only way that we could possibly find her birth mother. And obviously it'd be a miracle if we can do that, but we're hoping for a miracle.
Mm-hmm. And you've actually connected with other families as well through this process, right?
We have through Operation Reunite. Basically, they get letters, and we're getting these letters because our goal is to DNA test, not just searching for Cara's mother, but DNA test as many mothers as possible. So if we don't have a positive outcome, we can help someone else have a positive outcome. And the coolest part about this is Cara's story on her website, or on our website, amotherslovefilm.com. She's got a blog where she talks about being an adoptee, being a mother, the process of how, you know, how she came from having issues with abandonment to loving who she is and accepting who she is and being different and wanting to have a child and wanting to love someone. And it's amazing is Cara's gotten letters or emails from Australia, from England, from the United States, from women that are in their late 30s to early 40s, and they're asking her, you know, how did you do this? What's the recipe? And they're saying, you know, I'm single, I don't have a child, I feel like my clock is running out, but I cannot come to grips with the unknown, which is where did I come from and who did I come from and why was I abandoned? And Cara obviously doesn't have the answer for them, but it's amazing people that we're already touching with the project and we're not even halfway there yet. So we just got back from New York, Western New York, where Cara was raised. She was raised in a very rural community. Her home and her neighbor's home were surrounded by Amish community, which is extremely rural, and Cara was the diversity in the 70s and 80s there. And so it's interesting to see where she grew up and how that affected her. You know, if you're raised in New York City, you have a lot of Asian background there, and she didn't have that there when she grew up. Even though she grew
you're
up
filming
extremely
all of
loving
this.
We're filming all this. We just got back from Western New York. We were just south of Buffalo in Mayville. And then we're going to be interviewing Family Tree DNA, who's involved with Operation Reunite. They're keeping the database of all the DNA tests. We'll be interviewing the CEO of Family Tree DNA to talk about the technology involved and how the DNA process works. And the film is basically Kara is the catalyst to a larger project, which is trying to help these kids and trying to help these mothers reunite with the children they gave up. It's amazing the letters that through Operation Reunite, the letters I've read from moms yearning to find their kids and they have no way to. And they're back in Vietnam, obviously in a communist country, and it's just difficult, the language and everything else. So,
have you learned what is it, Vietnamese over there?
I haven't learned any Vietnamese. Obviously, just a few words. But Kara does speak Vietnamese. Portuguese aren't enough. Yeah. It's amazing though the outpouring of support and the project means very much to me. Obviously, because I want to help Kara find some peace with some of her unknown questions. And then it's amazing too to see the love in her family. I mean, her mom and her siblings, her mother had children after Kara came along. And you know, a lot of people ask, you know, why are you searching if you've got a beautiful family and but still those unknown questions are there. And I could understand completely, you know, if you're not sure of when your birthday was or your actual name, Kara's name is, she has a boy's name. Her Vietnamese name is a boy's name. So it was just given to her to get her out of the country. And so now the search is on. And, you know, when we go back to Vietnam, which will be next year, she'll go back for the first time. And just that's the healing process. Even if we don't find her mother, it's a film about healing and about learning about yourself. And it's a journey for, I think, not just her, but many other adoptees out there.
And I know you had some exciting news about the composer on this. Tell us about that.
Yes, we just confirmed a couple of days. Vanessa Vah is a composer. She's actually the zither, Vietnamese champion for zither, which is an instrument, the Vietnamese zither. I don't know if you're familiar with that instrument, but she's a champion, but she's an Academy Award contributor. She composed the music for Daughter of Da Nang, which was a documentary nominated for an Oscar in the early 2000s. I think it was 2002. And then she's an Emmy winner for another film that she wrote the music, composed the music for, Belina 52, which was another documentary about boat people, about a woman who survived on one of the boats for 57 days, fleeing from Vietnam. And so we're super excited. She's out of L.A. She just got. We were talking to her before the Olympics, and she actually had to go to London because of a show or something she was doing there having to do with the Olympics. But finally, over the weekend, we confirmed that she is a part of the film and wants to compose some beautiful music for us. And it's so important to us. I think music altogether is important, so important for a film, just as important as the message, obviously. And so we're super excited about it.
And how are you funding this project?
Good question. it's basically out of pocket. We had a Kickstarter campaign that went extremely well in terms of getting the word out. It didn't go extremely well in terms of raising funds. We're relaunching a campaign next week on Indiegogo.
There you go.
We wanted to re-edit some of these films, some of the footage from New York. So that was why we've waited. We wanted to create another different kind of a trailer for it. And basically it's going to be indiegogo.com/A Mother's Love Film. It's not up yet, but it'll be up next week. And so we're going to relaunch that. And then we've got a couple of sponsors that we're talking to. Family Tree DNA has already sponsored 100 DNA test kits that they're giving us. So, and it's just support and a lot of finger crossing. But it's support, like from Vanessa Vah, a composer. She's got a lot of work. She's very busy, and she's dedicated to this project. I mean, she mentioned she would like to travel with us to Vietnam when we go, just so she could get a feel for the emotion and what's going on. And so it's people like her that, and you know, Cara's family, they're totally behind Cara finding you know, some answers, and friends, and you know, it's important to a lot of people, and obviously myself. And so we're just going to do everything we can to make this film.
Great. I know we don't have time to go into all your other projects, but is there any other project that you're working on right now that you want to mention?
Well, it's kind of cool. Have you ever heard of Frankenstein, Missouri?
Frankenstein, Missouri?
Yeah, there's a town called Frankenstein, Missouri. And I've got a buddy of mine, who I AD'd a film with him. The film's called Man Alive. Joey Odendahl is the director, and he just hired me last week to shoot a mockumentary called Frankenstein, Missouri. And we're going to be filming in Frankenstein. Yeah, so it's going to be a little mockumentary. And then I've got, I do industrial type films too. I'm doing a film, the marketing films for the city of Pompano Beach. We've got three films we're shooting in the next month and a half.
Okay.
And we'll be revealing a time lapse next month. Basically, we took a time lapse of the beachfront in Pompano Beach, where they've remodeled. They're doing a whole remodel, you know, revitalization. And we've had the camera running for 1 year. September will be 1 year. A time lapse camera that takes a picture every 5 minutes. And so that's going to be a pretty neat film too. So we're excited.
Right. Any other website that you want to give people that they can check out more about you or about any of your projects?
Well, Gillon Media, GILLONmedia.com. You can go to YouTube / Kirk Gillon, Vimeo / Kirk Gillon. Obviously, a mother's love film.com. And you can just Google me, my name, Kirk Gillon, and find more. If you want to know more about the composer, it's vananvo.com, VANANHVO.com.
That's
pretty much it. I want to give a big shout out to my sons, Andre and Steven, in Lisbon, Portugal. I think they're listening right now.
Great. Hola. Oh no. Well, that's Spanish, but I.
No, hola is Portuguese.
What is it in Portuguese? Is it hola?
Hola. Yeah.
Hola. Okay.
O-L-A. O-O-L-A.
Okay, so it's spelled a little different.
H-O-L-A. Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
I know Spanish. I know some Portuguese.
It's similar.
Well, Kirk, thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thanks so much for having me. I appreciate it.
I'm sure I will be seeing you soon. But we look forward to hearing about all your projects, so I can maybe bring you back at another time.
Yeah, we could. I mean, there's one thing I could do another half hour with you on is the film industry and how it's changed. So we'd have to talk about that.
Yeah, there's so many things we could talk about because you've been in this for, 25 years?
Yes.
A long time.
A long time.
Well, we're running short today, but I will definitely bring you back, and I will talk to you soon. So thanks for coming on the show today.
Thanks, Rachel.
All right, bye.
Bye.
Okay. Well, that was Kirk Gillon, and he mentioned some of the projects that he's been involved in as a cinematographer and also a director, writer, you name it, editor. He's done it all, and like I said, I will have to bring him back at some point to be on the show and tell us even more because he has a lot of wisdom through his 2+ decades of working in this industry. And he's a great guy to work with. So if you're a filmmaker out there and you're looking for a DP, I would definitely recommend him personally and check him out at all those different websites that he gave you. Well, guys, as I've mentioned before, this show has been nominated for a Women in the Arts Miami Award, which I'm very excited about, and I would appreciate it if you would go to their website and vote for my show, which is Indie Streak under Best Web Show. Just go to womeninthearts.miami.com, and you click on the vote button, and then it sends you a link. You go to the link, and there's a ballot, and just look for Best Web Show and click on Indie Streak. Rachel Galvin, that's me. I would appreciate that. Also, I have a Facebook page for the show, which is also called Indie Streak, and it's I-N-D-I-E and then S-T-R-E-A-K. Please like the Facebook page because I put a lot of information on there, and the more people that sign up, the more I'll put up. I put castings, events, different things going on, and if you are a filmmaker who wants to be on the show or wants to send me something that you'd like me to announce, sometimes I'll have time to announce it on the show, or I can announce it maybe on my Facebook page. Feel free to email me at ravenprods, like productions, R-A-V-E-N-P-R-O-D-S at yahoo.com. And like I said, if you want to be on the show, send me a little bit about yourself, and I will certainly consider putting you on the show. In addition, you can check out my other website, which is independentstreak.ning, N-I-N-G.com. And that is a site where I have a lot of events, castings, et cetera, reviews, interviews. And it has a lot of members on there. The membership is closed right now, but you can go in and you can kind of talk to some of the filmmakers. You can email them, just like Facebook, without the chat. But it's all film industry professionals only. So check that out, too. And I think I've covered pretty much everything. Also, I have my Basics of the Biz site here on Blog Talk Radio, which is me talking about the acting industry from my point of view based on my book by the same name, Basics of the Biz, which is available on Amazon.com. Okay, well, that was quite a mouthful, but I appreciate you guys tuning in today and listening to the show. And like I said, if you've missed any of my programs here, you can go back and listen to the archives anytime. I've had some great shows recently. I just interviewed the writer for Night of the Living Dead. That's gotten a huge response, which I'm excited about. And also Marky Costello, who is the hosting guru, who is in town in Fort Lauderdale right now this weekend. And she gave an interesting interview as well. I've got directors, et cetera. So check into all those anytime that you can. And I will be back next week. I'll probably be back to the regular time of 1 o'clock. I had a little push up where I had to move up to 2:30 today because I was actually on the set of a film also. I'm not going to announce too much about that yet, but I was in a project myself today. So that's why the time got changed. But check me out next Sunday at 1 p.m. If there are any changes, I will be putting it up on my page, and I will let you know. But thanks for tuning in, guys, and I will talk to you next week. Okay, bye-bye.